As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
It's time to save. The Firestone Black Friday and Cyber Monday sale is on. Get 15% off all tires and $40 off a lifetime wheel alignment when you buy two or more eligible tires. Visit FirestoneCompleteAutoCare.com for details and more deals.
I think we got a show.
Oh, yeah, we got a show.
W-T-L.
And welcome back, everybody, to WTL, Where's the Line? I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by...
Jabron.
The Parlay Pounder.
You got it. We're back.
Yes, we are. We are back. We are Nebraska's first and only sports betting show, and it's been a wild ride. The trade deadline has come and gone.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll recap a little bit of the Bud Crawford fight. We gotta look back on that, you know, and we'll probably get into that in some of our hits and misses, and of course, we got another banger of a card for UFC coming
up as well. Every week.
Let's start with some of the big line movements we've seen after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Those teams, they just wait till the very end there in Major League Baseball. Everyone jockeying for, you know, leverage. You hear that word, leverage. Does the player have leverage? Does the team have leverage? No, the richer get rich. You know, the rich get richer. Is that what I'm trying
rich
to say?
Rich get richer.
Yeah. That's basically what happens. And we saw a lot of that again at this deadline.
Yeah.
Some big moves that actually moved your odds-on favorites to win the World Series in a big way. And I know you have a couple of them highlighted there, Jabron. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the couple that you really look at, Andy, is obviously the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
They made big-time moves with the New York Mets, getting Verlander back to the Astros and then Scherzer onto the Texas Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Before the deadline, the Houston Astros were at a plus 850 to win the World Series. Now there are all the way up to the third in line at a plus 550 to take down the whole thing. So you can see how much just one player can impact the entire, you know, World Series standing, especially when the two favorites are coming out of the NL. Somebody has to take that AL spot.
Right.
And obviously they're thinking it's the Houston Astros. Now, with the other side of that piece, it's the Texas Rangers that are in the AL West as well with the Houston Astros. They were all the way at a plus 1,100, Andy. They've moved all the way into, it looks like, fifth place.
At a plus 850?
At a plus 850, right in line with the Tampa Bay Rays.
And the Rays got leapfrogged by the Astros at that trade deadline. Their odds actually decreased. It went from a plus 700 to a plus 850 because they didn't really make any moves. They didn't have to make any moves.
Well, they don't have to make any moves, Andy, but I'll tell you one thing that's going to get a little wild here is that the Baltimore Orioles have took them over in the division standing. So the Baltimore Orioles are winning that division right now, and they're sitting all the way down at a plus 1,200 to take down the whole thing. A really fun one that I want to get into, Andy, as the playoff chase heats up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
The AL East is going to come down to it. It's going to down to one or two games, Andy.
Yeah.
And obviously both of these teams are going to be in the playoffs because they got three wildcard teams right now.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter. But to win the AL East right now, Andy, the leading team is at plus money. The Baltimore Orioles are at plus 110 to take down the AL East, and they're winning the division.
Yeah.
They're winning it by 1.5 games as we're making this broadcast.
And they're at a plus money.
And they're at plus money.
Wow.
But if you're still on the Tampa Bay Rays, they're sitting there knocking on the door there. You can get them at a plus 130, Andy.
All the Rays do is win.
Which I think is a really good line for them at plus 130. But we have to talk about Baltimore Orioles. They acquired the pitcher Jack Flaherty from the St. Louis Cardinals.
Huge get.
Yep. Trying to firm up that starting rotation for them going into the postseason and trying to win this AL East to get better playoff seating. So I really thought that was a huge move by the Baltimore Orioles.
I was reading an article earlier today about the winners, losers, you know, that's the first thing we got to do, reaction videos on YouTube, right? And one of the big winners were Mets fans, and I'm thinking, Really? You lose two aces and you win. But I guess, doesn't that kind of speak to Scherzer and Verlander weren't getting it done? Too many people around the New York area were saying they were, the tank, they're out of gas, all that stuff. Obviously, the odds makers, looking at these movements, the two biggest movers post-trade deadline, the Rangers and the Astros, they don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't think so, Andy. And yeah, you can say they are, quote-unquote, a winner, but I think they're one of the biggest losers of the season, obviously. These guys were a projected top three World Series contender going into the season, obviously with a salary-boasted, bloated roster.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they did get a large group of prospects, acquired in these trades or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but still, those things are just going to be leveraged for next season when they blow back up their salary stuff, so. I think they're in the loser category, I would say. Another division winner that I want to mention, because I'm a fan of them, is the Minnesota Twins. I thought they had a chance to really add some pieces there, and they really didn't do anything other than swap righty relievers, Jorge Lopez for Dylan Floro. And I think we might have got the lesser of the pitcher in the trade.
Whoops.
So I was really disappointed with the Twins because they are going to make the playoffs, I believe, winning that that AL Central, which is, really down low this year. But if you're going to make the playoffs, you might as well make a push for something, and the Twins didn't do that.
Well, and their odds did increase, so they got better. Went from a plus 3,000 on a lot of books, kind of your long shot line there, to a plus 2,800, which you could argue is still a long shot.
Yeah.
But it didn't go the other way. So they're at least saying the Twins didn't take a step backwards.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you really had to be scared of, which is just shocking when you have divisions like the AL East where everybody's all in most of the time, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Especially this year. And then you have the AL Central. It's like, well, who's gonna stick around and go to the—
who's gonna stick it up?
One of you guys has to go to the playoffs.
Exactly.
You're gonna have to go.
And host some games.
Yeah.
And that leads me into my next point, Andy. We're talking about, the playoff chase and all that kind of stuff. The AL Central, the Cleveland Guardians are only a game and a half back right now, Andy.
Yeah.
And they're at a plus 290 to win the division.
Mm-hmm.
One of these two teams, the Minnesota Twins or the Cleveland Guardians, is gonna win this division.
Yeah.
And plus 290, that is really good for the taking right now, because we just saw it this past weekend. I was down in Kansas City, watched mm-hmm. the Royals sweep my
sweep.
Twins.
Yep.
And, the Cleveland Guardians can do the same thing to them. So I think that plus 290 sitting there pretty juicy, especially for those Guardian fans.
Yeah. I mean, it really, Guardians, Twins, that's your central there. And then that was just kind of a head scratcher what happened in Kansas City over the weekend.
It did happen.
Nice little relief there for the Kansas City Royals fans. I saw another article. Is this some guys talk about winners and losers once again, going back to who won after this trade deadline? And some people are saying, look, there's a huge overreaction here for the Houston Astros, because after today's games, I think they're like a plus 60 run differential.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's right in line with the Chicago Cubs.
In the Twins,
Yeah. And like, these are good teams. And okay, in a world, you could see them doing pretty good in the postseason or having a postseason run, but you don't have them now third in line to win the World Series.
Exactly.
So I'm staying away from that plus 550.
Oh, I think so too. And that was the other thing I was going to lead into, Andy, there is, talking about playoff chase and all that kind of stuff. The AL West obviously shoved the Houston Astros to the front of mm-hmm. that division. They're at a minus 115 right now to take down the division. And they are, They're tied with the Texas Rangers now. And I think the Texas Rangers, their line at a plus 130 is so far of a better get.
Yeah.
We're talking about, like you said, run differential. The Texas Rangers at plus 147. That means that they know how to score, and they got the pitching, and then they just acquired their closer and two solid studs in the rotation. So I love the Texas Rangers to win this division, to be the number one seed in this division at the end of the year, and go into the playoffs as the AL West guy.
And maybe it's a tired take, and it's a take you hear all the time, but until we see the likes of Max Scherzer and Verlander during the playoffs in October, run out of gas or not perform well, then I'll say,
yeah,
don't bet on him.
Exactly.
You know, but I have no reason to think that Max Scherzer can't flip a switch. And when it comes into fall time baseball, playoff baseball,
yeah,
it's all right there. It's going to come back. And there's more arms around him. He's not going to have to carry as much as he did for the Nationals.
Yeah, no, I agree, Andy. And like you said, it's not that big of a, you know, climb for him. They picked up Jordan Montgomery, who has had a better season than Scherzer already this year. So yeah, he's practically the better pitcher in the trade deadline for him. And we all know Aroldis Chapman from, yeah, you know, Kansas City, the
Cubs,
New York Yankees, all the, all, you know, and everybody's like, well, he's having a down year. Yeah, he can still throw it 105 mile an hour. So I think he's going to be all right. So, no,
yeah,
I really like the Texas Rangers. I think that's a very good line for him at +130 to come you know, to throw money on them right now, because I do believe that they are overinflating the Houston Astros,
yeah,
with getting, you know, a Cy Young talent like Justin Verlander. And, you know, it's just putting him back in that familiar jersey where everybody says, oh, we've seen this guy, yeah, at the podium before. So I really like Texas Rangers. I get why the line's the way it is, but I think the smart money's on Texas.
Yeah, I like Montgomery, Scherzer, Chapman, Stratton, those pickups. That's
they're
unbelievable.
The
and then you talk about the 147 run differential with,
yep,
their offense.
And they're at plus money.
I like the Rangers. I like the Rangers as well. That's just the smarter bet right now as far as value goes, +850.
Yeah.
To 500. Anything else?
I wanted to get your take on one thing, Andy, and it's the Angels staying with Shohei,
oh, yeah,
Ohtani.
Yeah.
I think we have to talk about it. You know, he remained in, you know, Los Angeles. It looks like they're going to try and fight for a wild card spot, Andy. They're 6 games out of their division right now in the AL West, so they don't have much of a chance to win,
yeah,
that. And in the wild card, it's looking even. They're 3.5 games out of the wild,
mm-hmm,
card, so that's not out of the picture, Andy. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how you think
what their mind was like there. I totally understand everyone, you know, an uproar.
Get what you can for him. Get what you can for him.
Right.
Because he's leaving.
Financially, this is not a sound decision to make. You need to ship this guy out right now and get maximum value for a contender,
yeah,
a wealthy contender that can give you a bunch of prospects back, a bunch of day one starters back,
yeah,
things of that nature. But management, ownership, everybody in that building thought the only way we'll be able to retain this guy is if we
keep him
in the building right now. And also the one guy that no one has spoke to throughout this entire process is Shohei.
Yeah.
Ohtani might love it there. He,
yeah,
might love it.
Well, he
it
does. They do know that for sure, that he does like the weather and all that kind of stuff, and he likes playing in Los Angeles, obviously.
And he probably wouldn't like been traded away. He probably,
yeah,
wouldn't like that.
He probably wouldn't have liked to go to Minnesota or Colorado or wherever they would have shipped him to. No, it's a...
I think it's
the better option to keep him. And they actually did acquire CJ Cron from the Rockies,
yes,
which he's having,
yep,
a very good year,
yep,
and Lucas Giolito from the Chicago White Sox,
mm-hmm,
another bleeding team. So they did make some, you know, signs of life there, and Mike Trout,
yeah,
should be here, should,
yeah,
be back in the,
yeah,
next couple of weeks. So they can make a run at that wild card. I just
Rodon and,
yeah,
Trout. I mean
Rendon, yep.
Yeah, Rodon. Those guys are so injury prone, and that lineup was contingent on those guys staying
for
healthy,
sure,
and they did not, and then,
yep,
you start seeing the fall,
yep,
and that's what happened to the Angels again. You can't predict injuries. That's,
no,
just the one thing you can't do. I think the Angels, if they ever had a hope to keep Ohtani, this is what they had to do,
yeah,
and if we're talking about, like, he's the greatest baseball player of all time,
keep him.
I think you gotta do everything
I
in your
agree.
Power to keep him, not just focus on this season and getting a couple of right-handers and a left-hander. Like, give me a break. We're talking about Shohei,
yeah,
Ohtani.
Yeah, we're not talking prospects. We're talking about maybe the greatest baseball player to ever live. So, no, I like that take. And, yeah, that's the only thing I had on it. Pretty fun deadline, and
yeah,
I can't wait for the playoffs.
A lot of movements that caused a lot of movement on the betting odds as well.
Go.
Well, let's take a minute to recognize one of our fabulous partners, and that is the Nebraska Brewing Company. We've been enjoying the smooth, easy-drinking Ale Storm, the official beer of Omaha's AAA baseball team. Crafted with Pilsner malt and Sterling hops, making it the perfect summer baseball beer. Don't go anywhere, folks. This is WTL. And welcome back, everybody, to WTL, Where's the Line, Nebraska's first and only sports betting show. I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by
Jabron
the Paul. Parlay Pounder.
You got it. We're back.
Yes, we are. And we are getting back into your wheelhouse here. That is the UFC.
Yeah.
Fight Night. Got another big one in Bridgestone Arena out of Nashville.
Nashville, baby.
Nashville actually has some big-time UFC fighters born and raised there.
Yeah,
so
for
it's
sure.
Kind of been fun watching some of that content come out.
No doubt.
Throughout the week. But we want to talk about the action that's going to be within the octagon.
Yeah.
And let's start with a light heavyweight bout. A couple of ranked fighters here. We got the man, Dustin Jacoby. He's a little bit of an underdog here at a plus. No, he's a favorite. At a plus 120 against Kennedy Inazuku, who's at a minus 140 out of Nigeria. I got that backwards.
Yeah.
The Nigerian is the favorite.
Yeah, yeah. Kennedy Inazuku is the favorite there.
That's what I thought.
Yep. And like you said, light heavyweight, Andy. This is one that will likely come down to whether Najuku's extreme power and explosive ability can get him past Jacoby's slightly more technical kickboxing game.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of where the fight is. With that said, the African savage, which is Nezjuku, has shown massive improvements in his most recent fights, most notably showing some new wrinkles on the ground when he fought in USC 288 in May. So
grappling is getting better.
Yeah, so he's adding that to his game. Given his relative youth in this division, I think this is the man to watch kind of in the light heavyweight come up. So I like him in this fight, and I think he's probably going to KO him as well. So I got him. I got the African Savage by KO, probably in the later rounds.
Okay, because a lot of people that I've been listening to, they're saying this might be a little bit more of a coin flip, and that's probably why you're looking at a minus 140 plus 120. You know,
for sure.
It's nothing way far out there to think that Jacoby couldn't catch him at least.
No doubt.
Here. This is a heavyweight,
and
heavyweight.
Like you said, Dustin Jacoby, number 15 in the nation at light heavyweight. But like I said, when you get these kind of fun new guys coming around, they throw these guys to him. So I really think this might be Kennedy's, the African Savage's, coming out party, breaking into the top 15. Starting to work his way up the leaderboard a little bit.
And Jacoby's coming off a loss where Kennedy's coming off a win. Two guys going in opposite directions. Should we move on up the card?
Let's do it.
A fighter that we've talked about many a time here, but is having a tough time as of late. The Brazilian, Jessica Andrade, still number 5 contender
for this
women's strawweight weight class, taking on Tiana Suarez.
Mm-hmm.
She's been on fire. She's number 10 ranked right now contender in this weight class.
Yeah.
She also has a 10-0 record. Heavy favorite is Suarez.
Yeah, exactly. And while it might be flying under the radar, Andy, in the terms of attention that this is getting, this is truly a major bout for the strawweight division in this weight class.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, Jessica arguably passed her best now. She lost her last two bouts via finish, but the former champ is still one of the hardest hitters at 115 pounds. So most importantly, she carries a huge amount of respect for her fighters and all that kind of stuff. So you can't ever count her out. Suarez, on the other hand, has widely been recognized as one of the best prospects at both 115 and 125 for some time now, dating back to her debut in 2016. A remarkably powerful wrestler with a brutal top game, she holds wins over the likes of Nina Nunez, former strawweight queen Carla Esparza, and current flyweight champion Alexa Grasso. So she has some big names under her belt already, and she's trying to add to that. Most recently, Suarez returned from her over 3 years away to easily dispatch De La Rosa, putting her right back into the title mix. So, with everything going down to this, this is obviously a huge fight for both of them. Andre's trying to stay in the limelight. Suarez trying to get that title shot.
You're looking at Jessica with 35 fights, fights in the UFC under her belt, where Deanna only has 10 because she's an up-and-comer. And you talk about her wrestling, her grappling. I think you're only going to see that get better and better with the women's game. Now you're seeing it a lot more in high school. You're seeing women's wrestling at some colleges now. Even Shattern here in Nebraska has a women's collegiate wrestling program. So I think you're just going to see those skills really start to evolve and get better and better in the women's game here. You're not looking at any type of knockouts, TKOs, or stoppages at all?
I am. That's the only thing I'm looking at this one. the big question here, Andy, is if Suarez isn't a flawless fighter. You know, I'm kind of, you know, jazzing her up a bit here by any means, but despite her incredible ground skills, she lacks a little standing. So, and, you know, with Jessica, that's her whole thing. So, when she's undefeated, like we said, but punches at times, she throws wild punches when she's trying to get those takedowns. So Jessica could catch her on one of these. So the two things you got to look at when you're looking at this fight is Jessica to win by KO, which is at a plus 650, and then Suarez to win by submission, which is what I'm going to go with at a plus 120 here, Andy. I just think it's a really good bang for your buck because I think she might do this in the first round. If she gets her on the ground at all, it's over. Jessica is not good on the ground. Suarez is one of the best wrestlers in women's UFC. So it's over if she gets to the ground, and I do believe that this is going to happen, and it might happen in the first round. Suarez plus 120 best submission.
That's your best bet.
That's my best bet.
I like it. And she's so much bigger, too.
Yeah, no doubt.
She's taller. She's heavier. She's got a bigger reach.
It's just what it is.
You know, yeah. So, and she's younger, and she's heading up the ladder.
She's younger, and she's heading up the ladder. Like you said, Andre at 5'1". Suarez at 5'5", you know, she's going to be punching up at her.
Yeah.
Suarez is just going to get low, get those takedowns, and once she gets her on the ground, it's over. The reach is there for 62 to 66. Leg reach is there for 35 to 39. So all aspects she checks. Like I said, Jessica could knock her out, but this is all leaning towards Suarez, and it's all leaning towards a submission.
Yep.
Take that plus money on that submission. Take it to the bank.
All righty. Should we look at the main event here?
Yeah, Andy. And I just kind of wanted to reach back to last week to the major UFC event that was held in Salt Lake City to the main event there because I believe I called that one right with the plus money. Justin Gaethje, the highlight, taking down Dustin Poirier. I mean, you can't predict, you know, highlights like that. But when you're talking about the highlight, you expect one to come.
Boy, he didn't let the fans down, did he?
He did not.
I was going to save the hits and misses, but we can do it right now. That's fine. So now we're getting into the misses, and that was me with the diamond. Dustin, I mean, he just got ragdolled there, man. He just, everything was out of it. And then Gaethje got him with an extra one.
Yeah, he got one extra one. He shouldn't have been able to do that, but Herb got there as quick as he could. So, no, it was a really fun card to watch. How about Derek Lewis?
Just coming back
into it.
He looked like a beast.
Nobody expected him to do that. And then obviously his post-game interviews are the best in the biz.
He even got to the interview with the taking off the shorts and doing the
DX chop. So no, you gotta love that. Very fun card, and that's the reason that you love the UFC. They put on shows like that for the fans, and like you said, that Dustin versus Justin bout for the BMF title was one for the ages and very good for the highlight.
It was pretty awesome. And then, all it takes is just one of those kicks to the jaw, and you are done.
He was night-night. So
dealing.
I don't think that's the last we've heard from Dustin either. So it was a good fight, but the highlight came out on top.
Yeah, they still need to do the rubber match now.
They do. They do. 1-1 now. 1-1.
There's a couple other fighters out there, Notorious, that are calling for old Gaethje now. So we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, it'll be fun, no matter any way it shakes out.
All right, so fight night here in Nashville coming up this Saturday. Main card starts at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Yeah.
Interesting catchweight bout here between Corey Sandhagen. So much publicity right now about Corey Sandhagen. So hot. He's so hot right now. Taking on Rob Font, and a lot of people are giving Rob Font a tip of the cap here for stepping in because we had a fighter that wasn't able to go here. Rob Font on short notice, the Puerto Rican said, I'll do it. I can do this. And he's a dog. He's a plus 225 dog here.
Exactly, Andy. And yeah, everybody that follows UFC knows Rob Font ain't scared to fight anybody, anytime, anywhere. And this just shows to it because Corey Sandhagen is one of the best in the business. Yeah. Like you said, it should have been Umar Nurmagomedov fighting this guy, which really would have been a highly anticipated belt. Bout in that weight class, Andy.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, he had to back out, but you know, Rob Font sitting at number 7. This is a huge get for him, Andy. And everybody's talking about him being a warrior. No, it's just smart.
Yeah.
It's just smart for him to come in, try and take down one of the best people in the division because it shoots you right up the ladder if he can take down Sandhagen. You know, however,
quite the opportunity. It really was.
Quite the opportunity, but I think it's going to fall on dead ears because I do got Sanhagen here, Andy.
Yeah.
Font can be outstruck largely in his, you know, face with a heavier hitter, which Corey is, obviously. Sanhagen, on the other hand, is he's ridiculous dangerous just throughout his whole game in all areas. He's not only capable of exploding at opponents with his striking, as we saw against Song Yeon Dong and Frankie Edgar in his, you know, last fights.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, the only fighter to really handle the Sandman in UFC was Aljamain Sterling, which is the champion of the even TJ Dillashaw and Peter Yan only edged past him, you know, but they took a lot of damage. So I Sandman, Sanhagen, he's going to take this one down. I don't for sure. The best bet I got here, Andy, is Sanhagen by decision, which is at a plus 165.
Okay.
If you just take him outright, you have no value there.
Yeah.
You have no value with just taking him.
It open like at a minus 260 or something like that, and it's just been climbing ever since.
Exactly,
then.
And it's going to be well over minus 300 by Saturday. Yeah. So I just don't see any reason to take that juice. I really think Corey Sanhagen, by decision, is the best play. I don't know, because Rob Font doesn't get knocked out either. If you want to go Sanhagen, it's sitting there, you know, at a plus 170 to get, you know, for the knockout as well. But I really like it by decision just because Rob Font is such a tough guy.
Yeah.
So I got plus 165 for Corey Sanhagen.
Yeah, everybody's giving Rob Font a lot of respect here, but are kind of singing the same song as you. It's like he's probably going to drop this one, though.
Yeah, I think so.
You heard the horn there. That means we're up against it. You are the parlay pounder. You got a parlay play for this.
I do, and we've talked about both these plays already. I got Tatiana Suarez by submission at plus 120.
Okay.
Checking it there with the Sandman by decision at plus 165. Together, it's a two-team parlay at a plus 483, putting $25 on it to win 145.
There you go. And
can't
once
beat
again,
it.
Yes, I like the two-legger. You know, your odds substantially increased.
Yeah,
cutting
for sure.
That from
and
a
they're
three
both plus money and both really, really good things that can happen, you know, happen in these fights. The submission and the decision, last two fights of the night.
I like it. Let's take a minute to recognize one of our fabulous partners, and that is the Stock and Rod Company, an outdoor lifestyle brand for those seeking adventure. Whether it's hunting, fishing, hiking, they got you covered. Visit stockandrod.com, all one word, to get your wild game on. Don't go anywhere, folks. This is WTL. And welcome back, everybody, to WTL, Where's the Line, Nebraska's first and only sports betting show. I'm your host, Andy Klassen, joined by
Jabron,
the Parlay Pounder.
You got it.
And now we can do a few hits and misses here, or what we have left of them.
Yeah.
And I think we both hit in a big way.
For sure.
Maybe not as big as old Terrence Bud Crawford.
Yeah.
But we both had him winning in a landslide. I actually listened to last week's guest, Jimmy Allen, and I bet on the fifth round. He obviously didn't get the knockout in the fifth round, got it in the ninth, but it felt like he was in total control.
Yeah.
Before that fight, Errol Spence had been knocked down in a total of zero times in his 28 fights. I think Bud knocked him down
three times.
And once before the fifth. So I was thinking, oh boy, I hope he doesn't knock him out in the third.
No, exactly, Andy. My whole thing was that I thought Crawford by KO, TKO was the, you know, freest money out there, and it was.
Yep.
That was anywhere spanning from plus 260 all the way up to plus 320, wherever you could find it at. And that was, a little bit of a good payday after the Twins lost me money playing to the Royals. So,
saw that.
The Crawford, that was the good money there, the KO, TKO at any time.
Yeah.
So that's where I made my money, and it was good for Crawford.
Total domination. Let me run down some of these stats here. Other than the opening frame where Crawford was doing his thing, was kind of feeling out
both
his
men
opponent.
Were cautious.
But Spence got that opening frame.
Yeah.
Then it was all Crawford from there on out. He easily won the second, third, fourth, all the way through the ninth there where you actually saw the stoppage.
Yeah.
Total landed punches, 185 to 96 plus Crawford.
Yeah. Almost doubled him up.
Spence threw 480 punches. Crawford only threw 369. He was landing 50% of his punches, Jabron.
Yeah. No, that's crazy.
Look at this. Power punches landed. 98 power punches compared to 63. 206 jabs.
Yeah.
Thrown. Landed 87 of them compared to landing 33 jabs for Spence. I mean, this is so lopsided of
He's just in a higher class of fighter. He's the GOAT. He's the absolute GOAT at this weight. And against Spence at any weight that he wants to do it, he's going to find the same results.
Oh, so you're not listening to the people out of Texas saying...
I am not listening to anybody that thinks that Errol Spence has a chance against Terrence Crawford. He doesn't.
Yeah.
We just saw it. Yeah. Like you said, Spence was only able to win one round. It was when, you know, Terrence was just being cautious and figuring out what was going on. He was simply overwhelmed after he got knocked down in the second round. And the seventh saw further breakthroughs for Crawford as he pummeled Spence to the canvas twice more. Like you said, he went from zero knockdowns to three in his career, all by the same guy in the same fight. He don't want to fight this guy again, I don't think. You can make up whatever narrative you want to. The only reason he would come back in is to get that big payday again.
Right.
But he's gonna fall once again to Terrence Bud Crawford.
I honestly was kind of shocked with that narrative that Spence was saying and his whole camp was saying, and then all of his people, you know, from Philadelphia, from Texas, he went down to 147. He had three belts at 147.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, don't give me that excuse, especially after the fact. Then I saw Sugar Shane Mosley. Oh, you know, he got in a car wreck, and you could really tell a car wreck. Look at his face, was all red. No, his face was red because of, how many jabs? 87 jabs.
87 jab power punches to the face and got knocked down three times. The reason that it probably surprised him, he's never seen him like that before.
No.
If he gets back into the ring with him, it's going to happen again. How about, this was a real good treat for everybody that bought the pay-per-view, watching Eminem walk out Terrence Bud Crawford. From there on, I knew the fight was over. If you're going, you know, Eminem, you know, 8 Mile, walking you, the actual guy from 8 Mile walking you out to the ring, you got it in the bag. It's easy. Oh, that was awesome.
The guys I was with, the rumor, and that we just went crazy.
It was crazy.
It was awesome. You heard some rumors. You heard, he's trying to get him. You're like, okay, yeah, we'll see. You know.
Yeah.
And then when you actually saw that, the pause, they just did that perfectly.
It was.
And how about the troll, the fish fry?
Yeah.
He started.
For sure.
He was wearing fishnets, and he had the fishnet design on his shorts.
Yep.
Like, man, but when Bud tells you he's going to put it on you.
He's going to put it on you.
Oh.
I hope it happens again, because it's going to be the same exact thing, maybe even sooner.
And
so
congratulations to Nebraska's own, Omaha's own, getting his big payday his way. Had to jump through so many hoops.
Yep.
Finally got it, and there's no arguments now. He is the undisputed GOAT, and not one, but two weight classes, four undisputed belts now in this welterweight division.
That boy, Bud.
And Errol, if you want to take your medicine again,
it's going to be a lot more the same.
It's going to be a lot more the same.
I think you're right. It's awesome.
Well, let's stay within the ring here. We have another big high-profile fight.
Yeah.
Maybe some more antics along the way. But that's what you're going to get when you have Jake Paul.
The problem child.
Taking on another old UFC fighter, retired UFC fighter, Nate Diaz. This is being called Ready for War.
Yeah.
It's taking place in the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas. Pay-per-view is on the
Dozen pay-per-view.
Yep. It goes to the highest bidder, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And the line here, it was really shifted towards Jake Paul.
No doubt.
But he is your orthodox boxer compared to Nate Diaz, who's a southpaw. A lot of times that's looked at as an advantage. But Diaz is a UFC guy. He's not a boxer.
He's a brawler. He's a wrestler. He's all of the above.
Yeah.
He's one of the toughest guys that has ever, you know, fought in the UFC. But this just isn't what he does. He doesn't box people.
Yeah.
So no, like you said, after months of, you know, heated verbal exchanges, they finally got this deal done.
Uh-huh.
For Diaz, like you said, it'll be his professional boxing debut. While, you know, like I said, he established in MMA, one of the best, one of the all time greats. But Diaz may be coming up.
He's also 38 years old.
Yeah, he's also very, very old, and you know. He's going to be met with criticism when it comes to his boxing ability. It's just what it is. But, you know, Paul making his debut in 2020 has increased the difficulty of his opponents, you know, every time except for this one. He's digressing after he lost to Jake Fury. He's going back into the UFC pool. Yep. But I think the problem child holds the very huge advantage.
Yeah.
And you're seeing it with the -390 line for Jake Paul.
Yeah, and he's also getting back into his natural weight class here at 185. He's taller. He's heavier. He's 12 years younger. I mean, everything just kind of points to Jake Paul here for this pay-per-view. Is there any like betting angles or lines that you are looking at other than just the straight up Jake Paul here? Because there's no value in that.
Yeah, for sure. The lowest value one that you would still take and maybe throw into a parlay is the Jake Paul by KO sitting at -150. So that is not terrible, especially if you throw it in with something else over the weekend. A couple things I just want to go. The goal for both of these men, Andy, is simple in this fight. Make a statement, you know, put it in the judges' hands, all that kind of stuff, but for completely different reasons. For Jake Paul, he will want to prove that he is still a credible operator in boxing following his loss to Tommy Fury.
Yep.
You know, no doubt both men will come out swinging due to the intense rivalry, but it will be Paul who can see the most effective using his boxing skills to soften up Diaz, most likely be targeting the body before finding an opportunity to land his trademark overhand right, which is Jake Paul's big one.
Oh, yeah.
That does not mean Diaz has no chance of winning this fight. If he emerges victorious, the former UFC will need to make this fight an unpleasant one for Paul. And he can do that by using some dark arts to frustrate Paul in the hope that he will, you know, make a mistake. You know, Nate Diaz is one of the best, you know, talkers in all of, you know, MMA.
Yep.
He can get under people's skin, but Jake Paul has made a living of doing this so far. But if Nate Diaz has any chance of winning this fight, he is going to have to open him up.
Yeah.
He's going to have to get him thinking stuff and, you know, get over top of him. So I can't see Paul dropping this, you know, just to the level of, you know, boxer that Nate Diaz is at this age. So I really like Jake Paul, but I think it's going to go on for a long time. I got Jake Paul to win in round 8, which is at a +1200 right now,
which is
a very good
there
value.
Go.
I just think that for this to be an actual promotion, they're going to have to string it on a little bit.
Yeah.
And I like round 8. It's a good number, and +1200 is very good.
Kind of reminds you of like some Bud Crawford fights that he would have in Omaha where you knew he outclassed the guy, but
sure,
he would dance around with him for 4 or 5 rounds, then he would knock him out.
Yeah.
You know, trying to give everybody, and that was just nice of Bud to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Just end it in the first round. Because Nate Diaz, for everything that he did in MMA, you know, he won 21 fights there, but he also lost 13.
Yeah.
He really shot the stardom, in my mind, when he beat Conor McGregor.
For sure.
Twice. But out of
once.
Well, okay. Okay. All right. But out of those 21 wins in the UFC, he only has 5 KOs.
Yeah,
you know, there's just so much more to his UFC, his MMA game than just striking, than just straight up.
His whole thing is he stays in fights. He doesn't get knocked out. That's his whole calling card. So if people are going into this fight thinking that he's not going to get knocked out or anything, Jake Paul by decision is +350. So that is still a little bit of a, you know, that's pretty good value there, Andy, with something that could, you know, truly happen if Nate can withstand everything. He's never boxed before. I just don't think he has the knack for it. But if you guys are diehard Nate Diaz fight fans out there, him by KO is at a +550. Him by decision is all the way up to a +750. So there is some value there if you are on Nate Diaz. I still think the best thing is Jake Paul by KO at a -150. If you think that Nate has the chin to keep up in boxing, the +350 bite for Jake Paul and the decision is the two best bets.
I just hate that the age differential there, then also the experience differential.
For sure.
So, yeah, give me something like that for Jake Paul. And you really have reversed it because last time, Fury, you're all over Tommy Fury saying, this guy is an actual boxer.
Yeah, I was. And he did win the fight, but Jake made it interesting with him. So he showed me a lot in that fight, even though he lost. I don't like that he digressed in competition, but I agree. You have to sell the fight. You got to sell out pay-per-view.
Hey, yep.
And Tommy Fury's doing the same thing. He's fighting KSI, which is, you know, another influencer like Jake Paul. So they're all doing it. Might as well make some money.
All right, you heard the horn. That means we're up against it. Let's take a minute to recognize one of our fabulous partners. That is the Nebraska Brewing Company. We've been enjoying the smooth, easy-drinking Ale Storm, the official beer of Omaha's AAA baseball team, crafted with Pilsner, malt, and Sterling hops, making it the perfect summer baseball beer. Don't go anywhere, folks. This is WTL. Welcome back to WTL, everybody. Where's the line? I'm your host, Andy Klassen, and joined by
Jabron.
Ooh, the Parlay Pounder.
You got it.
All right, now it's time. We've been going through the NFL divisions here. And let's get on over to the NFC East.
Ooh, the beast.
A lot of buzz, like there always is, whether the division's up, down, or whatever. We always hear a lot just being from the East Coast there.
Yeah, and well, so many... just a lot of fans of these teams. These are, you know, four of the blue bloods of the NFL, obviously, and that's just the way it goes, you know.
Yeah, and one team has been around for like three seasons, the Commanders. So it's kind of funny how they do that.
Yeah.
But this is a fun division because it usually goes up and down, and there's different winners year in, year out. There's been three different divisional winners the last 3 years. The Philadelphia Eagles are the latest as of last year.
Yep.
They're going to try and repeat, and they are the odds-on favorites, but we always like to start at the bottom and work our way up. Just going off the odds, and that is the Washington Commanders. I'm looking at like a plus 1,200 right now.
Anywhere from plus 1,000 to plus 1,200, Andy. And like we're saying with the Commanders, if there's anything that Washington fans can celebrate, it's former owner Dan Snyder, sale of the franchise to a new ownership group that includes L.A. Laker legend Magic Johnson. So, that is one thing that you can kind of look at, Andy. The other thing I want to look at with the Washington Commanders, their over-under is sitting at six and a half wins.
Okay.
So, you know, poor results have plagued the Commanders for years, you know, a.k.a. the Redskins, a.k.a. the football team. But they still went 8-1 last season, Andy.
Yes, I know.
They have settled on quarterback Sam Howell for now. And even if he starts slow, having consistency at that position should help the Commanders. While it's easy to overlook Washington, you still got to look at playmakers like Terry McLaurin and Jonathan Allen. So they do have some playmakers. Key stat I have for Washington, they have started 14 different quarterbacks since 2017, but has won at least seven games, Andy, in seven of its last eight seasons. So even though they're a bad team, they're sitting right there at seven wins year in, year out. That's why that line is sitting there at 6.5. I think they get it done again. I just like the way that they're able to grind out wins.
Yeah.
Obviously, I like their head coach, Ron Rivera, ex-Panther. Yeah. So I just like the way that they kind of grind out wins. I think they'll get over the 6.5. They have no shot at winning this division, though.
No shot at winning the division, but I agree. I think they can get to 7, maybe 8 wins.
Yeah, for sure.
And Ron Rivera, his style of coaching, it still works. It still works.
It does.
Wonderfully in the NFL, and especially the NFC East. He's getting it done with, you know, really second-rate quarterbacks, you know, and a host of running backs.
No doubt.
You know what I mean? So he's a really darn good coach, but in a really tough position. And it's kind of a free shot for him.
No doubt.
There's no pressure on him.
No pressure at all.
They don't have a free year.
Yeah, they don't have a huge, you know, guy at quarterback that's demanding money or demanding wins and all that kind of stuff. I believe their defense is very solid, which will keep them in games. Mm-hmm. And like you said, running that football, being in games late, Riverboat Ron figures out a way to win. So I like over 6.5 wins, just no chance to win the NFC East.
No shot at the division, though. All right, well, let's move on up to the New York Giants.
They're
sitting in the three hole there at a plus 850.
Yep.
Big Blue, you know, a lot of people out of New York are saying, this is our year. You know, they kind of remind me of Husker fans in that regard.
Yeah.
But maybe there's some truth to it here. Saquon Barkley did get under contract. A lot of naysayers. I was surprised at how many people were throwing shade at him for signing a contract. He had no leverage, and he signed the maximum amount that he could.
Yeah.
And it's not your money. It's his.
It's his.
I'm just fine with it, and I don't think running backs are undervalued. I don't know. It's just a different game now.
It's a different game. People look at analytics, and they all check out. It's just the way it is, Andy. Running backs, once they get past 4 or 5 years old, they start decreasing in value. That's just the way it goes.
And he was a top five pick, so he had a great signing bonus.
Oh, for sure. The guy's rich.
Yeah.
But the thing I want to look about with the Giants, Andy, is Daniel Jones enjoyed his best professional season quarterback ranking, yeah. However, which I really liked because they need to do that, obviously. Yep. So they also grabbed a speedy wideout to help out Jones with that stuff, that regard as well. They're sitting there at over under 7.5 wins, Andy. I think this is very doable for the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of the most surprising teams as of last year. I think they can kind of, you know, funnel that energy, especially with getting Saquon, you know, under contract and making him happy. The key staff of the Giants, they have not had back-to-back seasons with at least 9 wins since 11-12. So
yeah.
It's been a while since they can actually do that, but I do believe that they can get 8 wins.
Yeah, and they've been able to do it before. And Danny Dimes, he did do better last year compared to the previous year. You know, only having 15 touchdowns, I think that's part of the coaching staff saying we want to take that risk out of his hands.
Yeah, for sure.
And you have Barkley as a running back, so when you get in the red zone, run the ball.
Run the ball.
I have nothing against that whatsoever. I think they're using the young quarterback in a good way, letting him build confidence, and maybe he can build a little bit more here in, what, year 3, year 4.
Yep.
So I do think the over-under is attainable. I'm not so sure about the division, though.
Yeah, no, I just think this division being top-heavy with the Eagles and the Cowboys, mm-hmm. I just think it's a little bit too much for the Giants to make a huge step like that in winning this division. We can't forget, though, Andy, that they did win a playoff game against the very good team of the Minnesota Vikings and then obviously fell to the Eagles in the divisional round.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if you want an outside chance with a lot of value – the Giants at plus 850 is where that is, but I do believe the over 7.5 wins is probably a lock for the Giants.
All right, so let's move on up the ladder here in the tool hole.
Yeah.
Second, pick to finish second in the division.
Yeah.
The Dallas Cowboys at a plus 190. And I mean, Dallas fans, they are so elated that they got rid of Kellen Moore. He's been the cancer. He's been the one why this team can't get over the proverbial hump.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Dallas fans, they were number 2 in scoring last year.
Yep.
They were 2 or 3 in passing yards.
Yep.
Their offense was not the problem, even though everyone's like, well, yeah, but our defense is great.
We have Micah Parsons. Yeah, that's one player.
Yeah, he had some holes, though.
Yeah, for sure.
The other side corner, I don't know. But I don't think you should be celebrating Kellen Moore out the door. I actually like the young coordinator.
Yeah, no doubt, Andy. And at plus 175, I just don't believe there's any value at taking the Dallas Cowboys to win this division at plus 175. This is a team, Andy, that I just don't. You know, they just don't have the spark for me, Andy. They just don't. They're not coming off a Super Bowl. They're not coming off a playoff win, all that kind of stuff. This is the Dallas Cowboys we're talking about. And, yeah, shooing an offensive coordinator out the door and then giving the play calling back to the head coach that could call the plays anyways.
Right.
That stuff never makes sense to me because if Mike McCarthy was so good at play calling, he would have been doing it all the time anyways. Yeah. And with the departures of Zeke, I think they lose that goal line.
Yeah.
That goal line back. They did add Brandon Cooks, which is a really good wide receiver.
Right.
He's getting up there in age, though. But I just think with all of this stuff that happened in the offseason for the Dallas Cowboys, the pressure is just heaping on Dak Prescott.
Yep. And you see all these
looking
videos.
Everybody's looking at Dak Prescott saying, this is the year. This is the year that everybody's looking at you.
Yep.
We're supposed to be the Super Bowl champions. You have supposed to have done this already like two other times, you know, make deep runs in the playoffs. Hasn't done it since his rookie year.
Yep.
So this is all on Dak, and I just think he's going to crumble under the pressure. Cowboys don't make the playoffs this year, so I am not taking this plus 175 to win the division.
You know, and he threw a few too many interceptions last year.
No doubt.
And that chirping's already begun because some video came out of camp of him throwing picks.
For sure.
And you mentioned the departure of Zeke. I'm hearing that the Cowboys think they're going to get him back through free agency, and I think that would be in their best interest because it sounds like Mike McCarthy wants to run the ball a lot more than they last year. That's fine. That's dandy. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it.
Very much.
And I don't know if Tony Pollard, a guy that's been injured, you know, off and on, going through injuries throughout his career. Yeah, can he be
three-down
guy?
Yeah.
Do you really want to give him 20, 25 carries a game when he was fantastic in his role splitting carries with Zeke?
Yeah.
A lot of changes here for the Cowboys. But as always in Big D, a lot of lofty expectations as well.
Exactly. And the Cowboys, like you said, average 32 points a game in their their 12 wins last year, Andy, so they can put up points. They only averaged 18 points in their five losses, though. Obviously, that's, you know, one of their losses came when Cooper Rush was winning and all that kind of, when he was playing quarterback. So you see what happens there. I don't like the Cowboys this year. I have them under the 9.5 wins. I don't think they make the playoffs in the AFC Beast.
So that leaves the Philadelphia Eagles. The odds on favorites had a -125, and everyone's saying, and I tend to buy into it, they may have gotten better through the draft, through free agency. Some of the things that they have been able to do compared to their last year's team, who made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Forgetting division titles, I think the Eagles might win the Super Bowl this year. I really think that, you know, for as everybody's saying, well, their coaching staff is plucked and all that kind of stuff, this team is together still. Yeah. They know what they need to do. They still have a handful of riches with all of their, you know, the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, all that kind of stuff. And that O-line is the best in football, especially with a running quarterback in Jalen Hurts. So Jalen Hurts, MVP, Eagles to win the Super Bowl are two big bets heading into the NFL season with good standing.
Yeah, and it's tough to argue. And we also have Cam Jurgens moving over to guard. Go
Big Red.
Husker shout out there. They draft him as a center. But, you know, our guy from that podcast, New Heights, what's his name? Kelsey brother?
Jason.
He wanted to hang on one more year for another Super Bowl run.
For sure, Andy. And they're over-under sitting at 10.5 wins. And you got to think to yourself, no matter the strength of schedule for the Eagles right now, a line of only 10.5 wins for one of the most talented teams in the NFL, I think it's a no-brainer. I think the over is hitting on this. Philly went 14-3 last year. They get another game added onto that.
Yeah.
The Eagles had a point differential of +133 in an NFL season last year. The third highest in the league. I think they blow the roof off of this division. I think they're heading back to the playoffs. I think they're heading back to the Super Bowl.
I like it. I really can't argue with the Eagles. They showed me a lot. I was trying to fade them a little bit last year, and that caught up to me. I'm not going to do it again. And we just talked about how Jason Kelsey and other veterans are coming back. They want to run it back. That's the mindset in the locker room.
That is the mindset.
And they
Super Bowl or bust.
Yes, exactly. And I think when everybody's on the same page like that, special things can happen.
It does.
I'm not saying they're going to make the Super Bowl, but I do think they're going to win
the
NFC East with the question marks we've already mentioned for those three other teams. So
go Birds.
That'll about do it for us this week, folks. Be sure to follow us on ESPN Tri-City Radio, their Facebook page, and Twitter. And also, if you haven't already, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. That has been a lot of fun watching that thing grow, and especially those YouTube shorts.
Yeah.
We get a lot of feedback on those.
For sure. Those are a lot of fun.
Fun to produce as well. And we also got those daily free picks over on TikTok for all you TikTokers out there.
Yeah.
For Joe Braun, the Parlay Pounder, I'm Andy Klassen. Thank you for listening. This has been WTL.
Nebraska Public Media Sports brings you live all-day coverage of the NSAA High School Football Championships on Monday, November 24th and Tuesday, November 25th. Watch all day, both days, on Nebraska Public Media or live stream every game on Nebraska Public Media's YouTube channel.